Welcome back to the Someone to Tell To podcast. It's just really good to have you with us today. We're excited to share our conversation that we just had with Dr. Sangwan this afternoon. It was a really meaningful conversation just around this concept of learning to listen to our bodies. And I know for myself, as I was listening to her speak, I was just being reminded of some of the stress that I've been carrying as of late, and even today, just the lack of sleep that I had the night before of us recording this episode, and just some things. She gives some really practical tips by the end of the conversation of things that we can implement to improve our health.
Yeah, she's really done some great work, is doing some great work on about listening to our bodies, on about burnout and stress, and how all of the systems of our bodies, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual, are connected, and that we often don't necessarily look at things that way, but we need to, that there's a connection with everything that we do. And we hope you'll enjoy that. And also look for, at the end, she turns the tables and asks us a pretty serious question and you know, wants answers from us, which we really appreciated that she did that. And here, you'll have to hear what she has to say. And I hope you'll enjoy it very, very much. Our guest today, Dr. Neha Sangwan, is a thought leader and international spokeswoman, bridging people in positions of power to humanity and helping humanity to discover their power. Dr. Sangwan is the CEO and founder of Intuitive Intelligence. She's an internal medicine physician. She's an international speaker and a corporate communication expert. Her private practice and corporate consulting focuses on empowering individuals, organizational leaders, and their teams with the tools for clear, effective communication. She addresses the root cause of stress, miscommunication, and interpersonal conflict, and often is able to heal chronic conditions such as headaches, insomnia, anxiety, and depression. She regularly consults with organizations such as the American Heart Association, the American Express, Kaiser Permanente, and Google, and has shared her keynote presentation on the stages of TEDx.
Well, Dr. Sangwan, welcome to the Someone to Tell It To podcast. We're so grateful to have this conversation with you today.
It's an honor to be with you both.
Well, we'd love to just start our conversation with you, as we do with all of our guests. And it's just a simple request, but just to tell us a bit about yourself, your story, your origins, your passions, what brought you to the place you are today.
Wow. All right. I'm going to give you the bullet points, the cliff notes, and the takeaways. So I am the middle daughter of Indian immigrants who had an arranged marriage and came to this country in 1965. For an education and decided to raise their children here. So I grew up in Flint, Michigan, and I overheard my father saying he wanted a son who was an engineer. I heard my mom wishing that she could have been a doctor and hoping that one of her girls became one. The people pleaser in me said, nobody needs to fight about this. I can do both. They are not mutually exclusive. And so I am a mechanical and biomedical engineer. I worked at Motorola in the 90s when Motorola was a thing, and I went on to become an internal medicine physician. I worked in the hospital. I burned out 20 years ago as a hospital physician, and then I left about 4 years later and became an entrepreneur. And I wanted to heal not only burnout, but our inability to communicate, because I started to notice in my patients that their inability to communicate was making them physically ill. And they were the ones who taught me that when we could help them resolve communication issues, et cetera, they started coming off their medications, not on them. And that was startling to me because I had never learned anything about that in school. So since then, I've gone on to be an entrepreneur, written a few books, and done some TEDx talks. And now I'm a speaker, author. I live in Boston. I've been in California for a long time. I'm in Boston now, living there. And now I help people get to the root of their health issues. I help them understand when something that's physically wrong, it has a physical origin, and when it might be something unresolved on a mental, emotional, social, and spiritual level. So how'd I do?
You did great.
So helpful.
Fantastic. Well, communication is very important to us. We think it's vital to healthy human relationships. But we also know that people do not always communicate, obviously, very well. And miscommunication can be rampant. What could you talk about? What are some of the more damaging consequences of lack of communication, of miscommunication, poor communication?
Sure.
We'd love to hear what you're seeing, what your research, what your experience has shown you.
So I'm gonna start with my family, and I'm gonna say in my first book, it's called Talk RX. It's about leaning into conflict and understanding all of these topics. I tell a story about my mother. And so my parents, I told you, had an arranged marriage. Not only didn't they know each other, right? They came to a foreign country. And so they were navigating a lot of change. Well, my mother culturally was taught to be a good girl, that the wife is the one that holds a family together. And if anything goes wrong, it's your fault. So my father, my mom's more quiet, less expressive of her emotions. My father blows up. He has a temper. When he gets upset, he explodes. Well, my mother kept quiet about all of that for many years. She started developing headaches, which turned into more frequent headaches, which turned into migraines. She sought help, got a CAT scan for her, you know, to make sure there wasn't a tumor or something else going on in her head. And then the doctor said, I think it might help if you talk to a psychologist. So she started seeing a psychologist who said, would you invite your husband to come to our next session? My dad, wanting the best for my mom, said, sure, I want her headaches to get better. So he came to this session. And during that session, the psychologist said, so what I think is happening is that you are absorbing your husband's temper. You're not speaking yourself, and you're absorbing his temper. So then he looked at my dad and said, so you need to let her speak up, and you need to be aware of how you are in her presence. And he said, of course. My mom said the moment she understood what was happening, she got up and left that office that day and never had another headache. When she understood she was absorbing the emotional stress of another human being, she realized, oh, that is not worth what's going on. And she said as soon as she started doing that, she started speaking up, she started communicating more. And that's just one example in my family. For me, I'd say it was throat constriction. So whenever I thought I was going to disappoint another, lose a tennis game, you know, not get a gold, you know, a blue ribbon in gymnastics, not get an A, very early on, I realized in my culture that academics and athletics were very important, and I got hugs and accolades and, you know, appreciation from the people around me, my parents, my grandparents, the Indian community. I knew that that was my ticket to success, so I focused on athletics and academics. But whenever I was afraid that something, I was holding back what I was actually thinking or saying, wanted to say, when I thought I was afraid that I might disappoint someone, my throat began to constrict. And it climaxed really in medical school and residency and when I burned out. That's when it was the worst, where I literally had to get two anesthesia experiences where they scoped me to make sure and convince me that something was not growing in my throat. The second time the anesthesiologist took me off the table, he said, Neha, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm a fourth year med student. He said, oh, this is your stress response. It had caused me so much grief. I had tuned out of my own body rather than partnered with it. And when we do that, it shows up. And so if you have unresolved issues emotionally, mentally, emotionally, socially, spiritually, eventually they will show up in your body to get your attention. This has happened with many, many patients. And I give six examples of it in that book, Talk RX, that I was talking about. Every section starts with a patient helping me understand how their physical ailment has something to do with their stress underneath.
Thank you for sharing both of those examples, both from your parents' story and then also your own. As I'm listening, what was it about that situation with your parents that you have held on to? What was it that, was so meaningful to you that you reference it even now?
Really, I think it's that my father came from a culture that was pretty patriarchal, and rather than get defensive about it, he wanted the best for my mom. So not only was he willing to go to the psychologist appointment, he was willing to say, like, I don't know how to do this differently, but I need to be aware of this if this is causing her pain. So I think when we don't understand in ourselves, like, I'll give you an example for anybody who's listening who's a parent. I think when we're young, us tuning into our bodies is how we cry, get to sleep, get someone to pick us up after a nap, tell people we're hungry, tell them we have a poop in our diaper, whatever it is. It's the way we know how to communicate. But as you grow older and we start to get socialized, we start to hear things like, go in your bedroom and don't come out until you have a smile on your face. Be a good girl. Be a good boy. And we learn to check out and tune out of the very signals that our body is giving us. And when a child is playing, maybe playing with a toy, and then they're doing just fine, and then a parent says, it's time to go to school. And they say, I can't, I have a tummy ache. What do we say? We say, you were just playing with your brother, or you were just playing with that toy. Get to school. Like, get on the bus. You're going. But what that child is actually trying to tell you is there's something their body is protecting them from. I don't know whether it's not safe to be on the bus. I don't know whether they're eating in the cafeteria alone. I don't know whether they're getting singled out or shamed in their classroom. I don't know what it is. But I know that their body is speaking to them. And at a very young age, we teach our children, because we don't understand it, not to tune into their body because it's inconvenient. Because we don't know what we would do with that signal if we had it. And so if we are tuned out of our bodies, how can we help the next generation tune in? And so I think I was astounded really at my mom's wisdom, and once she understood the problem, being able to resolve it immediately, as soon as she connected the dots, the power of connecting the dots between your physical body and your unresolved mental, emotional, social, spiritual situation. That's power.
There was a TED talk you did, a TEDx talk at Berkeley called The Communication Cure, and you said that you ask several questions to your patients. Mm-hmm. Why you? Why this illness or event?
Mm-hmm.
Why now? What message is this trying to give you? So would you please explain why those questions are important to the work that you're doing and how they help to illuminate what you're trying to accomplish?
Sure. So when I was 33 years old, I walked into the hospital one day and I had 18 hospitalized patients. Someone called out sick, so I took the pager that navigates all incoming transfers from local hospitals. To say I was overwhelmed would be an understatement. 5 hours later, I walked up to a nurse, Nina, and I said, hey, Nina, could you please get 40 milliequivalents of IV potassium for the gentleman in 636? And she said, Dr. Sanglan, are you okay? And I said, sure. Why are you asking me that? She said, that's the fourth time in under 5 minutes you've asked me that same question, and I've answered you every time. That was how I walked into burnout. And I went to a psychiatrist's office, a colleague, and an hour later, I went from running the hospital to standing in line to get my own medication on stress leave. There was nothing that could mortify me more than being paid 60% of my salary and not being able to work. But while I was off, I started researching stress. Did you know that stress causes or exacerbates more than 80% of all illness? And I want to say that again. Stress causes or exacerbates more than 80% of all illness. The moment I realized that, I came back a few months later and I said to my colleagues, we treat people through physical catastrophes in the hospital, strokes, heart attacks, pneumonias. Why, if stress causes or exacerbates more than 80% of all illness, once we've stabilized them physically, why are we not asking them what's at the root of their stress? And with a straight face, I got many versions of the same answer, which was, just like you wouldn't order a test that you didn't know what to do with the result, why would you ask a question that you didn't know what to do with the answer? And that upset me so much because I thought to myself, because people are depending on us to get to the root of the problem. People are depending on us to help them not have a heart attack right now, and then I help them through it, and then 2 years later, they're like a revolving door. They're back in the ER with another heart attack. So I decided that day that I was going to make it my purpose in life to help people understand how to pick up the clues earlier and learn from this experience of their body breaking down. So I call it the awareness prescription. I asked the hospital, will you help me research this? They said, no, we're not interested in that. We need you to keep seeing patients. So I decided I've got 18 patients of my own each day. I can ask them. So the night before I was ready to discharge someone, once they were stabilized physically, I would pull out my prescription pad, because back then in the early 2000s, we had those on paper in our white coats. That's right. I would pull it out and I would ask them, I'm going to give you something called the awareness prescription to get to the root of your stress, because I want to see you again, just not here. Not in the emergency room. I'd be happy to see you at the theater, the grocery store, the park, but not here. So if you're interested in getting to the root of your stress, journal about these questions and the nurse will page me tomorrow. I'll give you an extra 20 or 30 minutes and you and I will get to the bottom of your stress. Question number one, why this? Why a heart attack? Why not your left leg? Why not your liver? What is the significance of this part of your body breaking down? Whatever their answer was true, and it was from their heart. So I just listened deeply. Question number two, why now? Why not 2 years ago? Why not 3 weeks from now? What message did your body need you to get in this moment that you weren't receiving? Question number three, since hindsight's 2020, what clues, signals, patterns along the way now make perfect sense to you? Question number four, what else in your life needs to be healed? And question number five, if you spoke from the heart, what would you say to me? I stopped counting after 2,700 of them in a row could not only tell me what was at the root of their stress, but they knew, and together we could figure out a plan of what they needed to do to heal it. Then the most astounding thing happened next. Before I started doing that, people's patients, families, the families would be the ones thanking me. Thank you for saving my dad from a heart attack. Here's flowers, here's chocolates, all these things. After I started doing this, it was the patients themselves writing me saying, Doc, you're never going to believe this. I only need half of my anxiety medication that I've been on my whole life. Hey, Doc, I slept through the night for the first time in 5 years. Hey, Doc, I don't need my headache medication like I needed it. Hey, Doc, I'm dizzy, and my doctor's saying my blood pressure medicine, I don't need it anymore. They're the ones who taught me this connection between our stress in other areas of our lives and how it shows up and breaks us down physically. So what you're speaking about and what I spoke about in Let Your Heart Speak and TEDx Berkeley was the connection between the awareness prescription and making sure that people understood the connections that my mom got that day.
So fascinating. I'm curious, why do you think it took so long for that awareness to occur? Like,
For
this is
me, you mean?
obviously stress has been it just for I mean stress has been something that's been around for a very, very long time. Why is it that we were unaware of that beforehand?
I don't know if it's that we're unaware of it. What I would say is, I show up and problem solve at the intersection of disciplines that people don't even think go together. The engineer in me is not satisfied by your headache getting two Advil. The thing I know that is true in my soul is that a headache is not an Advil deficiency. The engineer in me was not satisfied with that treatment. It'll get you through your next meeting, your next podcast, but it's not going to solve the problem. So when I come as a doctor and I want to alleviate someone's pain, whatever's going on, acutely, I want to make sure I can give them pain medication, I can take care of whatever they need in the moment. But the engineer in me kicks in and says, okay, what's the root cause here? How is this integrated and connected to the rest of their body? What are all the options here? Then the executive coach in me comes in and says, what is underneath this that could be also fueling this stress on a mental, emotional, social, and spiritual level that could be showing up in their body and contributing to this? So when I look at problems, I look at them at the intersection of disciplines that most people don't think go together. That's the best answer I can give you.
Are medical schools dealing with this in any way? Is that something that is beginning to be taught and understood and explored? Or is there still is there still a disconnect, sometimes between these things?
So yes, there is a disconnect, and yes, they're starting to pay attention. With healthcare costs rising 18 to 20% a year, if you don't get to the root of the problem, autoimmune diseases, chronic disease, whether it's diabetes, obesity, anxiety, depression, mental health, emotional health, all these things are rising because we're not actually dealing with the root cause. And so now what's happening is traditional medicine, I spent my education was focused on crisis care. So why is traditional medicine amazing? It's incredible when you are in a crisis. You get into a car accident, you're having a heart attack, you're in an acute crisis, you are going to be incredibly grateful that we are there to help you. But when you take a short-term solution and you use it over and over again and you call that a long-term plan, that's expensive. And it doesn't really work. It just temporarily puts a band-aid over things. So now, yes, there's a course I know that's at Syracuse University called Food as Medicine in medical school. There is Rachel Naomi Remen, who is one of my mentors, has a program that is healing the healers and trying to awaken the students. Young medical students, too, how important it is to care deeply for your patients, how to take care of yourself in it. I've written a book, right? TalkRx, and I'm putting this all together. But here's the thing. When I look at complex problems and I think about how to solve them, I put it in a me, we, world context, meaning, what is my part in this? What is the culture of medical school and training, right? And what is the culture of healthcare? Me, we, world. And when I look at a problem on that level, what I realize, whether it's burnout, whether it's, how we train our doctors, I also look at it as now, short term, long term. Okay, so there's a timeline over which I look at it. And then there's a concentric circles of me, we, world. When I understand how behavior has to show up in me in order to fit in a system, there's only a certain number of residents that man a certain number of hospitals, and there's a certain amount of funding given for that. That's going to determine how many of us are there, and there's certain hours in the week that the hospital needs to be manned. So there's a system issue here, as well as there's an educational issue here. And then if I'm teaching the medical students how to take care of their body and the signals in their body and all of these things, but I haven't changed the policies in healthcare, how is someone going to stay up for 36 hours? Or to, now it's 24 hours. When I was training, it was 36. How do you force your body to stay up and go against your biology if you're not drinking sugar, caffeine, you know, doing something to stimulate your ability to do that? So what I'd say to you is, I think it's complicated. I think you're exactly right that it's a problem. I think we need to look at it with comprehensive thinking and an open mind to change. And the joke in medicine is, healthcare changes the death of one physician at a time. Because they say, this is how we did it. This is, why are we doing it that way? Because this is how we were trained to do it.
I'm just curious, how has your talk and the subsequent conversations that you've had about it, like, impacted your relationships with your family or and anyone else?
You know, I think I am, you know, I think everyone in our family is an innovator and an entrepreneur in new ways. My dad was young and bold, and he came to a new country, right? My mom, too. My mom's a researcher. She's a scientist. She moved forward in the genetic area and in making our world and the food that I was nourished with amazing. My older sister is a writer. She's talented. She's funny. She always made things really fun around the house. My younger sister is kind of a do-it-all and give us grandchildren and nieces and all of that. I think my role in the family was to move us forward in the arena of self-awareness. Let me just tell you, I wasn't popular for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I come in and I say, in an Indian family, we have to talk about some boundaries because this is not working for me. And everybody's like, what? We don't do that. We don't do that. We're a family and we all stay together. But I knew that in order for my relationship to be healthy with my family and me want to see them as I got older, I would need to create some boundaries. Another way is I had conversations with my parents about when I was young. And it's very cultural to share kids kind of with the extended family, like giving them to aunts and uncles and grandparents. You kind of just pass kids around and a village raises them. So when I was sent away from 3 months to 2 years old in Africa to live with my grandparents, me coming back, and it was really traumatic for me. So I needed to have, when I realized later in my life that it had set the stage for me becoming a people pleaser, for me trying to make sure that I didn't do anything wrong and please everybody, when I was working through how I wanted to be different in my relationships where I could really speak my truth, that throat constriction I spoke to you about, part of my healing was me having a conversation with my parents about the impact that experience of sending me away had on me. Now, it wasn't easy. It's not like we walked in and I said it and then they were like, oh, we understand. They had to go through their own experience of sharing with me that this is what their culture was and they thought they were doing what was best for me and for the family. And they didn't know about the implications and then they apologized. And so it goes on over time. But here's the thing. I have gotten to the place in my life where the first 3.5 decades I spent living other people's lives. And I know now that I will not spend the rest of my life not living my own life. And to do that, I have to understand what shaped me. And so this experience, these conversations, my parents could have made the choice, my family could have made the choice not to speak to me. But what I knew was that I had been separating from myself to turn myself into a pretzel to be what other people wanted me to be. And they were happy that I became an engineer and a doctor and all these things. But there was a part of me that was deeply sad. And it was time for me to face that. And that's what the last 20-some years have been.
So what kind of guidance would you give for people who want to speak their own truth mm-hmm. to their families from the heart? Especially about difficult things.
Well, the first thing I'd say is be kind to yourself and be kind to them. Because the way I think of families are that they're souls that are growing and learning through time together. And so what the impact was on me, they may not have imagined or thought of. They were young parents. They were in their early 20s. They're making decisions that if I had to make those in my early 20s, I don't even think I knew who I was. So bring grace and compassion. Bring self-compassion for what you've been through. Thank yourself for the strategies you've used to get by. Maybe it's comfort food. Maybe it's alcohol. Maybe it's, you know, binging social media. Maybe it's binging Netflix. I don't know what retail therapy. I don't know what you've used to get through when things got hard. But have grace and compassion for yourself for how you've gotten through hard things when the littler version of you, the younger version of you, didn't know what else to do. And then I'd say, get clear about how your body talks to you. So in my second book, which is Powered by Me, From Burned Out to Fully Charged at Work and in Life, chapter 4 is deciphering your body's unique language. What I mean by that is your physiology. Your body's always talking to you. The question is, are you listening? And so I'd love to ask both of you. I told you when I was stressed or afraid of disappointing another person, my throat constricted and my stomach turned. When you guys get out of your comfort zone, when something's uncomfortable, how does your body talk to you?
That's a really good question. I would say one thing for me is I don't sleep well.
Yep. So you find yourself up at night.
Wait. Absolutely. And have a hard time quieting my mind. Mm-hmm. Have a hard time getting back. I have no problem falling asleep ever. Mm-hmm. But after several hours, if I wake up, that's a really big struggle.
Yep.
To get back to sleep, to get enough rest. Mm-hmm. So I think that absolutely is one way.
And I want to ask you real quick before we switch. All right, go ahead. Go ahead and do yours as well. And then I want to tell you something about sleep that's really interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, we both have that struggle for sure.
Yeah.
But I would also add, I think for me, if I find myself just ruminating in my mind over something for lengthy periods of time, yep. like it's not just something that can get addressed quickly, it's something that lingers, and I don't know how to handle the situation.
Yeah.
That's when I just, feel disoriented.
Okay, so I have a 3-time rule. The first time I notice something happens that startles me or surprises me or I'm not sure what's going on, I take notice of it. The second time something similar happens, I mentally file it because it might be a pattern. And the third time it happens, it's time for me to have a conversation about it. So I call that either I wake up in the morning, it's the first thing on my mind, I call that the sunrise rule, or the 3-time rule. That's how I know, because then when I go into a conversation, I have 3 examples of how this has shown up that I can have a conversation. So the other one that I wanted to say was about sleep. And I wanted to know, when you said I always go to sleep well, do you walk, work out, move your body in ways that you enjoy during the day?
Most days, yes. Yes, very much. I try to walk a lot. I run. I'm a runner.
Yep.
So I move. I move a lot.
Okay. So this is a fun fact. Everything's connected. So what's been studied the most is 20 to 30 minutes of walking or jogging. If people do that 3 to 5 times a week. And you have something called adenosine and then 3 phosphates attached to it. Okay. ATP. That's where we get our energy. When you exercise or just walk, right, 20, 30 minutes a day, not only does the adenosine and the triphosphate break apart to give you energy, but the adenosine grows up to your brain and helps you fall asleep. So it lifts your mood, the equivalent of an antidepressant, if you're walking 20 to 30 minutes a day or jogging. and it makes you sleep better. So the interesting thing is you want to notice if you're heavier on trying to process things mentally versus emotionally, you work out, what'll happen is you'll fall asleep easily. And then if you wake up to go to the bathroom, you turn, you wake up, you look at your phone, anything goes on, if it revs up the mental area, all of a sudden you're off and running again. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if any of that resonates.
That's exactly.
I think that's very much
an appropriate metaphor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a different kind of running.
So what do we do about that? How can that possibly be changed?
Sure. So there's lots of things you can do about it. How about this? Because I'm not going to get to all of it, I will give you a link for people that want to resonate with this, a personal sleep intake history, so you can answer the questions yourself, and I'll give you a video and a worksheet that they can work through this. But I'm going to give you some highlights. Is that all right?
Okay, great.
Perfect.
We would both love that.
All right. Yes, because there's so much to sleep. The first thing I want you to know is your days beget your nights beget your days. So it's not just about your time that you're sleeping. It's about how you function during your days. There's cortisol, which is a hormone inside of us. There's adrenaline, which is short acting, and it helps you navigate surprises and avert a crash and all of that. When adrenaline is being used over and over again, the long acting version of that cortisol kicks in and helps us manage our stress. So on a purely physical level, what I want you to know is when cortisol is at its highest is when you wake up in the morning, when you're naturally going to wake up. And then throughout the day, there's a curve that is the natural curve that we go through where cortisol is the lowest at night and you fall asleep. So there's the rise and fall of cortisol. What messes with this? Stress. Because stress, cortisol is your stress busting hormone. So if you're really stressed and at night you're being stimulated with your devices and all of these things, cortisol is rising and getting a bump. It's not declining so that you can fall asleep. We have so many things to think about. A really good thing to do in the morning is get sunlight first thing in the morning. It helps all the chemicals in your body start to wake up and move. You work out, which gives you the adenosine, which is great. Caffeine, so coffee, boosts your cortisol. Pay attention to, have you started with half a cup, but now you walk in and you say, make it a double. Today's going to be a doozy. Notice if you're having coffee, right? Because caffeine can bump your cortisol as well. So when we're starting to keep ourselves going in a world that thinks faster is better and do more with less and all of these mantras that we hear, we start to change how our body works in order to fit our external environment. And that can sometimes be messing with our sleep. And I'd also say, notice how late in the day, caffeine is a diuretic. It makes you urinate. And so if you're having that in the afternoon and evenings, you're going to be getting up or drinking water, you know, after 6, 7 p.m. Pay attention because your body is processing that and you're going to have to wake up to go to the bathroom. What else would I say would be highlights? I'd say things like where you sleep should be for sleep and sex. It should not be a place where you're riveted by drama movies and you're getting completely stimulated and you're wondering, why can't I fall asleep? Your devices next to you, right? How are you checking those in the middle of the night when you wake up? If so, charge them somewhere else and just do an experiment to see if you can allow yourself to go back to sleep. Something I really want people to know is that sleep happens in cycles. And as you go in and out of these cycles, you're meant to briefly awaken and then go into the next one. So it's not like you have to be knocked out the whole time. But notice what you're doing when you change direction, move, you know, come out of one cycle and you're moving into the next. pay attention, because if you will use that as a time to stimulate yourself mentally or do something when you go to the bathroom, now you're kicking yourself out of the sleep cycle. Are any of those helpful?
Oh, very helpful.
And
could absolutely see a lot of those.
Well, in this whole doing
play out in our lives,
you see those play out. Which ones were key for you guys?
I think both of us exercise extensively, so that's good.
A Denison.
I only drink coffee and only drink coffee in the morning.
Okay,
that's helpful. But I know for both of us, because we're leaders of a growing organization, there's just a million things to do.
You bet.
It just feels that way, and like we're often sending emails late at night, and like. Yeah, it's really hard when you wake up in the middle of the night to not be thinking about your to-do list. I actually just said that to my wife this morning. Like, I wake up in the middle of the night, and then I got a to-do list. And so I try to keep my phone actually close to my bed so I can just type the to-do list and get it out of my mind as quickly as possible. But
here's one way.
It's not
here's
easy.
One way to do that, okay? Keep just like a post-it pad or a paper and pen right next to you. Before you go to sleep, write down your to-do list for the next day. Leave that next to you. Charge your phone somewhere else, because you don't need the rays and the blue light coming from your device. That's stimulating. And write down anything if it comes to you and you need to do that. And it will be waiting for you in the morning. But the last thing before you go to sleep, make sure that you're focusing more on things you're grateful for, about your team, about your partner, about the business growing, about whatever it is. And as you move into your subconscious, you want to be in the space of gratitude. That's really helpful. There's three main things that happen when you sleep. One is physical repair of your immune system, of your muscles after you work out. The second one is memory consolidation, integrating all the things that you have absorbed during the day. And third, emotional processing. And for those of us that are growing a company, are busy, growing a family, our lives are expanding. Sometimes people think, oh, it's a waste of time to sleep. I could get two more hours of work in. So I want anyone who thinks sleep is a waste of time, I want to tell you you're right. If you're referring to what's not happening on your external to-do list. But your body has an internal to-do list that it must take care of for you to function at your peak. And that is the physical repair of your immune system and muscles, memory consolidation, and emotional processing. If you start cutting your sleep down and you're not getting the 7 to 9 hours of sleep that an adult needs, what will happen is your body will start rationing what it does during sleep. And which of those three, physical repair of your immune system and your muscles, mental memory consolidation, or emotional processing, which one do you think it makes first?
I'm going to guess mental.
You're going to guess the memory consolidation. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you guess?
I'm emotional processing.
You bet. So that's why you fall sick after a few nights of not sleeping. Your immune system and your physical repair is deprioritized because your emotional processing and stress is the most damaging to you. And it's like a flush of your limbic system that occurs. Your limbic system in your brain is what stores emotional memory. And you processing your emotions is, in fact, one of the most important things. So when you exercise, you get all the endorphins, you get the adenosine that's going to help you sleep. But if you don't get enough sleep, your immune function will go down.
This is such a helpful conversation. And I know a lot of it just kind of overlaps with stress that leads to burnout. I know our time's probably winding down, but I'd just love to ask, you know, what would you want to say to us and to all of our listeners just about what does it look like to listen to our bodies?
It looks like personal power. It looks like agency. It literally will help you pick up signals early. And who in a world moving this fast doesn't want to pick up signals early? I think the name of the game in building a business, in thriving in the future, moving forward, is going to be with the people who learn to make decisions without all the data. We have AI, we have all sorts of technology moving in our world now, and we're going to have to make big, quick decisions. And wouldn't it be great to have your own physiology, your own instinct, your own intuition, the inner data inside you to accompany the external data that is out there? Because to me, those are the people who are going to be able to pivot to meet the pace of the world. They are the employees, they are the family members who are going to be able to not just survive our world, but thrive in our world. So I think it is one of the most important things that we can focus on, learning to decipher the unique language of our own bodies.
That's such a great place to end.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I also just want to add to something you said just a few moments before about gratitude. Mm. I actually have noticed that when I do take the time before I fall asleep to think about what I'm grateful for, to think about the things, the people, the experiences that I really treasure, I do sleep better.
Yep.
I have noticed that. Yep. But it is a discipline to be able to remember to do that on a regular basis. And you know, and that, so that's
a good reminder.
That was a good reminder.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad this was helpful. And I will make sure that I give you a pulse check on burnout. I will make sure that I give you the sleep worksheet and video that people can access to do this diagnostic on themselves. Nothing, of course, is in lieu of seeing a health professional. I'm not saying that they can do it all themselves, but I think there's some simple things you could try and experiment, and you might solve the issues that you're experiencing. And everything's connected. That I will say. Pick anything you don't think is connected. It's connected.
It is, yeah. Well, we thank you so much for this conversation today. There's a lot more I'm sure we could all talk about. And just grateful for the work that you're doing and for what you have learned and for sharing your own story, your own struggles and burnout and challenges with the world.
Yeah.
So that perhaps all of us can learn from that.
To sleep a little better.
And yeah. So we are grateful for you and grateful for the work that you're doing and the message that you're sharing. So thanks for being with us today.
You are so welcome. I think if we are not a world that learns how to lean into healthy conflict, needs to learn how to take care of ourselves in this busy world, I don't know what's going to happen. So I hope that this reaches far and wide. And thank you for what you're doing to bring awareness to this. And the people in your company are very lucky.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, that was excellent.
Great. Thank you.
Well, we're looking forward to receiving the information. She promised to send us the links and the questionnaire, the assessment, as we explore, as you heard at the end, our own sleep patterns and the way we sleep are sometimes don't.
Are we excited to receive this test?
I don't know. It depends. It depends what it's going to say or what it's going to prove to us, or what we may have to do, but we appreciated her interest and, you know, just asking the question about where stress manifests itself in us. And for both of us, primarily sleep is the thing that is sometimes most difficult. Mm. And so we're grateful and anxious to see what she's going to be sending and see how that goes.
Yeah, I hope just that all of us heard loudly and clearly the importance of just listening to ourselves, listening to our bodies and what our bodies are telling us, because our bodies are vessels that need to be well cared for. So if we're going to listen well to the world, we need to first listen well to ourselves. We're just grateful to have you with us, as always, on the Someone to Tell To podcast. Thank you for following us, for following our work. You can find us on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram at Someone to Tell It To. And we just encourage you, if you enjoyed this episode or any of our episodes, we just encourage you to always be thinking of other friends in your network that you could share these episodes with so that we get it in more ears. So until we listen again.